Morning. Imagine having a conversation with an alien being who had just arrived on Earth and was curious about human art forms. Representational sculpture and painting should be fairly straightforward to explain. Novels, plays, and movies also. But how would you explain music? You could say there are these things called notes, which are air vibrations of a specific frequency. Notes can be created on different instruments, and each one adds different higher frequency overtones so that human beings can distinguish the same note played on a piano versus a violin. And if you play multiple notes together to create something we call a chord, you can create pleasing or displeasing combinations. For instance, you start off with a note, add another one, that's nice, that's nice, that's nice. Not so good. But interestingly, if you add some other notes, that's okay. So depending on how you mix them and add other notes in, this has an emotional effect. And it's really hard to explain why that would be. Moreover, having created a chord, you can now go to sequences of chords, and the way that chords move from one to another can also have an emotional effect. So if we take something fairly basic, those are nice, and you kind of feel like it wants to go. So it's like a little, you've gone on a little walk, and that's obviously home for some reason. Now you can change that. You could go, that's okay, but it's a different emotional effect, maybe something a little mysterious, a little bit of tension. So by changing the way chords move to one another, you can create emotional effects in people. You can also do something similar with rhythm. So if you make very subtle changes to the rhythm of notes, you can have a big effect. And if you do it right, maybe you can make people want to dance. In terms of jazz, the key, or one of the key aspects, is swing. And as Duke Ellington said, if it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. But it's really quite subtle. Let me try and illustrate. So if we take an old standard from the 40s called In the Mood and pretend that it had been written by Mozart, you might get something like... Whereas when Glenn Miller did... Now, the difference in timing is really quite subtle. In fact, if you write that down in most normal musical nomenclature, it will look the same, and there'll just be a little note on the top to play it with a swing rhythm. So it's a complicated issue, and it's not really very obvious why those things have such a profound effect on people. There are obviously very many different types of music, and each has its own beauty. And it's hard to explain why people gravitate to one or another. For myself, over my lifetime, I've developed more and more a love for jazz. It's hard to explain why you like a particular music, but for me, jazz represents perhaps the ultimate combination of harmonic complexity with rhythmic excitement. But the most exciting aspect of it is the opportunities that you get to express yourself through improvisation. Now, jazz is a quintessentially American art form that was created by the fusion of complex African rhythms married to the complex harmonic principles of European music. And as such, it's a direct offspring of the horrors of slavery. But perhaps we can take comfort in the fact that such an oppressed group of people were able to give birth to such a beautiful and universally admired style of music. The newly arrived slaves held on tight to the complex rhythmic patterns of their own people as a way of retaining their own cultural identity in a strange land, and as a way to lift their spirits in the face of such difficult circumstances. As a side note, it's interesting to see that wherever the scourge of slavery touched the New World, there now exists a fabulous musical culture. Think of the American South, Cuba, Brazil, and the Caribbean. Now, traditionally, jazz takes a fairly simple tune, and then people will improvise different melodies over the basic harmonic structure. So if you take a simple tune like Autumn Leaves, most of you probably know it. So in jazz, you would take that harmonic structure and then create another tune over the top. And you can do that ad infinitum until people get bored with you. In a typical jazz performance, the original tune, which may be something written specially for the occasion or maybe just a well-known standard like Autumn Leaves, normally you play that at the beginning to kind of fix the structure in the ears of the listeners. And then players will take turns improvising a new melody over those chord structures. And then usually the original tune is played once again at the end to kind of bring everything full circle. Now, the beauty and the terror of improvisation is that it has to be done in the moment. When you're doing this, sometimes you can kind of hear a new melody line spring into your head a second before you need to play it. But at other times, it rather feels like you're sitting and watching your hands produce a stream of notes of their own volition. It's a little bit like watching a Ouija board generating words, if you're familiar with it. It gets even more interesting when you have multiple musicians playing together, because good jazz musicians are continually listening to one another and responding in real time to what the others are playing. Some of the process of improvisation clearly reflects other aspects of creativity, such as the idea of flow. When you're improvising, you need to occupy an intermediate state of focus. If you stress too much about what you're about to play, you'll get tense and usually mess it up. But if you space out and daydream, you'll either lose your place or just play something very mechanical and boring. There's clearly a paradox about improvisation. You actually need a deep understanding of music and harmonic theory in order to do it, and you need manual facility on the instrument. But as the great bebop sax player Charlie Parker once said, you've got to learn your instrument, then you practice, 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 and then when you finally get there on the bandstand, you forget all about that and just wail. The key point being that you need to store all of the technical information and muscle learning in your brain, and then find a way to let go of that so you can let true creativity take place. Of course, that's easier said than done. Sometimes it works well, sometimes not so much. The problem, or one of the problems, is that when you're practicing, you'll come up perhaps with some nice shining ideas for a melody line. They'll stick in your brain, and it's very easy later on to regurgitate them when you're supposed to be improvising and creating something new. One further pitfall is that certain sequence of notes just happen to be mechanically easy to play on a particular instrument, and so it's easy to fall into playing a melodic line that's easy for your fingers rather than one that's true to the moment, whatever that means. In many ways, you can see the parallels to precepts underlying Buddhism. When you're improvising, the only moment you have is now. You can't think back to what happened a moment ago, whether it was some horrible mistake you made or an idea that you particularly liked. And you can't stress about a difficult set of chord changes that's coming up in a moment, because if you do that, you'll mess up the line you're creating right now. There's no time to think about the guy who cut you off in traffic yesterday, or how you're going to handle tomorrow's big meeting at work. When you play with other musicians, and when everything is clicking, you have the opportunity to transcend your ego and become absorbed in a spontaneous collective generation of something new. Of course, there are many times when it isn't like that, and instead you're getting upset because the bass player missed a note, or you're worrying that your playing isn't up to the standard of the other musicians you're with. There have been many books written about the relationship of music, improvisation, and spirituality, and we can get into some very murky waters here. Centuries ago, most serious Western music was created within the context of the Christian church, and it was taken as given that masterpieces such as Handel's Messiah were divinely inspired. Nowadays, it's much less obvious. There are fabulous musicians of every faith imaginable, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Sikhs, plus any number of agnostics and atheists. Much to my chagrin, one of my favorite jazz pianists, Chick Corea, whose piece I started off with, is a prominent Scientologist who always makes a point of crediting L. Ron Hubbard as the source of his creativity. What am I supposed to make of that? More to the point, if music and improvisation is such good spiritual practice, how come so many of the great jazz musicians struggled with drug or alcohol problems? And even without those extremes, many of the greatest musicians are renowned for being totally egotistical monsters. The same thing can be said of other great creative spirits, such as painters and writers. Picasso and Hemingway obviously come to mind. Perhaps there are two competing forces at play. The actual work of creating great music or great art helps dissolve the ego, but the adulation that comes with being seen as a famous artist bolsters the ego and warps the sense of self-importance. At the end, I guess that for me, the source of true creativity is being prepared to do the hard work of learning from what your many predecessors in the music have been able to do, and then synthesizing music and ideas from that that expresses something that's true to yourself. At its best, spontaneously creating music can bring me as close as I'm ever likely to get to perfect flow and perfect mindfulness. And at its worst, perhaps I can still make pleasant music for an audience while I worry about tomorrow's dentist appointment. Thank you.